Chapter 40. Gigi. Alec gives me a glass of champagne, and we clink the glasses together. He kisses me. "I have something for you," he says. "It'll make you feel better." I blush and try to put on a happy face, when really I feel like I'm falling down a giant hole and can't stop. "What is it?" I try to sound excited. I should be excited. It's a gift. He thought of me. He pulls a necklace from his pocket. A tiny silver disc hangs from an antique chain. It catches the light. It's beautiful. Even more beautiful than the little rose charm he gave me. The one that went missing months ago. The one I haven't had the heart to tell him about. "Alec," I say, feeling all choked up, mostly from the sadness and having all these emotions I don't know what to do with. "It was my mom's," he says, turning me around. He lifts my curls and clasps the necklace on me, and the cool metal is soothing against my neck. "My mother left this behind, and before that, it was her grandmother's necklace. I wanted you to have it." I press my fingers on it, feeling its enormous weight. I don't know what to say. And I really don't. I want to jump up into his arms and kiss him all over his face. But I can't pull out that feeling inside me. "Just wear it," he says, "and smile." I kiss his cheek. My parents wave at me from across the room. I saw them earlier for brunch. They are brown dots in a sea of white. Aunt Leah's hair is big and curly, but my mother's is surprisingly pulled into a bun. "I want you to meet my parents," I say, dragging him off. He follows me as we move through the crowd, our hands clasped. "Hey," I say.
"That's our girl," my dad says, grabbing me first.
I smell coffee and feel his beard rub against my cheek. His eyes are warm and brown, and he's got on his one and only suit. Mama hugs me next, and she smells like home. Mango and incense. I've missed both of them, but loved living on my own. And their embraces make me feel like crying and pouring out everything that's happened. But I swallow it down. It would just alarm them. Give them cause to pull me out of school. As if they didn't already think they had enough reason. "Hey, kid," my Aunt Leah says. "I've missed your face." She holds my hand and squeezes it. "Can't wait to see you and Giselle, Giselle." She tries to make me laugh. "I want you to meet someone." I pull Alec to my side. "This is Alec." My dad sizes him up, and I see Alec swallow. Little beads of sweat collect on his brow, and he bites his lips, which I've never seen him do before. It's kind of cute. "Oh, is this the boy you kissed at the end of the Nutcracker?" Aunt Leah teases. "Aunt Leah," I say, feeling hot.
"Is that true?"
my mother says, turning to Alec. He grins at her, and I know she's probably going to love him as much as I do.
"We were wondering about that." "It was the tiniest, most respectful kiss," Alec teases. "Well then,"
she opens her arms and gives Alec a huge embrace. When they part, my mama pulls me to the side while my dad speaks with Alec.
"Why aren't you wearing your monitor?"
she asks. "And what's wrong? I can see it all in your eyes."
"Nothing, mama. I'm fine. And so is my health. I'm not wearing my monitor because I'm not dancing right now," I say.
Her concern compiles with the stress I already feel. She tiss.
"I'm concerned, Gigi. I mean, I'm happy about all this and how well you're doing, but I want you to not lose sight of what's most important, your health. This really worries me, and I feel like you're hiding something," she says, like she's been burrowing in my mind, reading my thoughts.
"Aren't you always worrying?" I ask, craning my neck to hear what my dad is saying to Alec. I give her a tiny kiss on the cheek and flash her an everything-is-all-right smile.
Well, this is why I brought this. She pulls out a thin wristband. It's flat. It resembles one of the bands you get at a theme park entrance. Only it has a digital face. It vibrates if you're in a danger zone. I frown. Mama! Gigi, I need you to do this for me. She takes my wrist, and I let her put it on. My biggest nightmare is that you don't take this whole thing seriously, that you push yourself too hard. I was holding my breath the whole time during the nutcracker, and I know I'll be doing the same for Giselle. Scared that it will be too much exertion. I'm fine, I say, trying to ease back to Alec and Dad and Aunt Leah. Just wear it for me. It'll put my mind at ease. She kisses my forehead and rubs my cheek. You look beautiful. I can see the changes in you. A real ballerina. Her face is warm with delight and approval. I put it on my wrist. Happy? She smiles. We return to the conversation. Nothing about that exchange made me feel any better. Mama takes hold of my dad's hand. And what's that beautiful necklace you're wearing? Aunt Leah asks. I show off Alec's family heirloom. My dad twirls me around a little, and I catch Beth's icy gaze on us, and the gaze of the woman standing next to her with her same cheekbones and upright posture, Mrs. Abney, her mother. Any momentary lift I experienced disappears. I freeze and then quickly turn around. My hand goes to my neck, and I feel a need to hide the necklace from sight. I try to continue to listen to my parents chat with Alec, but I feel the Abney's eyes burning into my back. Will saunters up and gives me and Alec a big hug, but Alec is too distracted by my dad to talk to Will, who looks a little hurt. Will pulls me to the side. Just wanted to check on you. After, you know, everything. The butterflies. His words land soft, but I feel the tears welling up inside me. How will I tell my dad about them? What am I supposed to say? The truth? Will takes a glass of champagne from a waiter's passing tray. I mutter thanks. I'm putting it all behind me. He touches my neck and the necklace Alec gave me. You know he loves you, right? He glances behind us at Alec. I nod my head. He doesn't look at me anymore. The way he loves you is the way I love him. His admission makes me feel instantly sadder. I wonder if Alec knows. I open my mouth to respond, but I'm empty. Will must see that on my face because he touches the necklace one last time. So pretty. Be careful. Then he bolts without waiting around for a response. Bet walks by my parents. My stomach twists with dread. I remember what Alec told me about her and her mama and all their issues. I hold my breath as she passes us by. Oh, Gigi, who's that girl? My mama points at Bet and reaches out for her. She touches her shoulder. Mama, no, I say too late. You were just lovely in the Nutcracker, young lady, my mama says. I didn't get to tell you that after the show. I know it's been months, but I thought you should know. Why, thank you, Bet answers politely, her big blue eyes looking doe-like and sweet. Alec shifts uncomfortably. I flatten my hand over the necklace. A long pause stretches between us all. Everyone says hi to her, and I know I should have introduced her more quickly. Mama, Dad, Aunt Leah, this is Bet Abney, I say at last. Gigi's one of our best dancers. Bet blurts, and they all soak up her praise. So glad you could come all the way out here from California to see our performance. Her compliment feels genuine, but she's as fake as a plastic doll. We wouldn't have missed it, my dad boasts, pulling me into another embrace. You look like a ballerina from a music box, my mama says, touching Bet's arm. Doesn't she? Bet squeezes my mama's hand and acts as if they've known each other forever. My mama has just called her perfect. I'm so glad you've got friends here, Gigi, my mama says, leaning over to kiss my forehead. It was one of my other worries. Now I don't have to as much, even though you know I will. But you've got both Alec and... What did you say your name was again, honey? My mama turns to Bet. Bet, she says, making her name sound light and airy. Oh, right, yes. My mama touches my cheek, then hers. Such pretty girls. Bet and I look at each other, both holding awkward grins on our faces.
Chapter 41. Bet. I know that necklace, is all I can think at first. Mr. Lucas and his wife know the necklace too, of course. And I wonder if they're thinking what I am. That the way it looks around Gigi's neck is all wrong. It was supposed to hang around my neck, closer to my throat than my locket, but the same silver glint, the same delicate, antique links of the chain. Gigi keeps running the tips of her fingers over the chain, back and forth. Fidgeting. A girl who fidgets should not be a prima ballerina. A girl who fidgets should not have the Lucas family heirloom or a place next to Alec. It looks all wrong, having her fill the space where I should be. I say goodbye to Gigi's parents and try to hold in my rage as I head to the buffet table. My mother swoops in next to me before I'm tempted to snatch some finger food. No Adele, no Eleanor, no June even. Just my mother in her black gown and two sparkly diamond earrings. You just let her take it all, huh? She says in my ear. I make fists with my hands and wonder why she didn't bring flowers, why she didn't give me a real hug, or wish me luck on our performance tomorrow, why she is thinking so intensely about Gigi and not at all about me. I look back over at them, the perfect, happy family. They're all talking with Mr. K now, and Alec has barely left her side, like he's some part of them now, and not part of me. He hasn't even spoken to my mother tonight. I've let my hair down from its bun, but I dressed like the ballerina I am instead of wearing regular people clothes. Long white tulle skirt and an embroidered bodice that hangs off my shoulders. Not a freckle in sight. Just a hint of sparkle I dusted on my collarbone and shoulders, and otherwise, snow white, unblemished skin. That hasn't changed. Neither has my almost white hair, my pink lips, the way I hover an inch above my mother. They all want me to be jealous of Gigi's freckles and brown skin and wild hair, but when I catch sight of myself in the mirror, I'm still a replica of the ballerina in the music box. The golden-haired one in the glistening tutu, with long legs and a perfect pirouette. I almost cry with the realization, the pride. Even Gigi's mother said so. That's why there's nothing to be afraid of when I stop listening to my mother and Mr. K and the voices in my head. The petit Ross still skip over and pull on my hand and ask me for autographs and kisses on their cheeks. They all want to be like me. Not her. I watch Alec kiss Gigi's hand, and I regret taking that pill. I can't seem to not focus on the tiny ways he touches her. I want to go snatch him away and remind him that I am the one for him. I find a quiet corner in the room and open my locket. I skip over the white pills and take the pale blue oval ones in the middle. One from my mother's stash, and the other one a little gift from my dealer. Then, I watch as Alec leaves Gigi's side and stands with his dad and stepmom. It seems like they're in some heated conversation. Gigi's parents have left, and I wonder if they've been introduced to the Lucases. I imagine Alec's stepmother's chilly reception of Mrs. Stewart and her hippy-dippy dress and mannerisms and multiculturalness. And it makes me smile a little, knowing she'll always love me and my mother, and Gigi can never have that. Last year, Alec and I paraded around the spring gala and put on an impromptu show. We performed complicated lifts and turns just to thrill the crowd. I gulp down more champagne and ignore how many calories it's adding to my body. Or maybe, if I just wait long enough, he'll grow tired of her. Because there will always be a huge difference between Gigi and me. She won't always be new and fascinating and strange and mysterious. But I will always be the girl in the music box. The girl who has known him practically forever. Nothing she does can change that. Henri joins me at the buffet table after my mother makes a dash to speak with Morky. He doesn't greet me, just brushes his body against mine. I feel his breath in my hair and the anger rising off him. The pinch of his fingers digs into my hips, snapping at me like the predator he is. "What's wrong with you?" I say, facing him. "Get away from me." "You should start being nicer to people," he warns. I don't acknowledge him, and with a ballerina's walk, pointed toes, turned out legs, head high, I join my sister, who has just walked into the room with some of the dancers from her company. I take another glass of champagne from a tray, and another pill. I need it to kick things into high gear. And I'm Bette Abney, determined, willful, successful. The girl who makes things happen. It will be a good night. A night to remember. A night that changes everything. I will make something happen.
Chapter 42. June. I recognize the knock at my bedroom door. Fast, light, aggressive. Bette. "Tonight's the night," she says. She's decked out in a fringy silver number and has another dress in her hand. We're supposed to be resting for opening night tomorrow.
"We're all going out."
She looks at my pajamas, disapproving. "Like I promised." I open my mouth to decline, but she doesn't let me.
"It's tradition," she says. "Mandatory? You know that. All the level 7 girls did it last year. We have to."
I can't believe she actually meant what she'd said. That we'd go out. All of us. I'm so stunned, I leave the door open and stumble backward a little. Girls chatter in the hall about Bette's dress. They wish she'd come to their rooms. Or invite them wherever she was headed. They tell her she looks gorgeous. I try, but she pushes past me and enters the room without listening for a response. Gigi went off with Alec and her parents, saying she'd see me later. I never go out. It's just not me. And yet, within 2 minutes, I'm somehow letting Bette dress me up like a little doll, like her little plaything. Part of me hates myself for it, but another part, albeit a much smaller one, has longed for this. Because this is what normal girls do. They play dress up and dance and get a little crazy. They have girlfriends and share secrets and giggle about boys. They're sisters, maybe not by blood, but in the moment at least, when it feels like nothing will ever be this real again. That's what tonight will be. I can feel it in my bones, and I've never done this before.
"You're really going to steal his eye tonight," she says,
pulling one of her dresses, a deep plum number, down over my head. Her breath smells of alcohol, and her pupils are dilated and glossy.
"Who?"
I say, not sure how she knows anything. She pauses to look me in the eye.
"Oh, come on. There's gotta be someone."
She doesn't even give me time to nod.
"Then it's time for you to claim him."
"She'll never let him go," I find myself saying, even though I've never said anything to anyone about Jaehee. Well, except Gigi. She rubs makeup into my cheeks, puts shadow and liner on my eyes. Then she speaks again.
"The thing is," she says, "you have to realize that this isn't about her. It has to be about you."
I don't know if she's talking to herself or me, but her words ring true. I feel hopeful in Bette's capable hands. I've become glittering and shimmering and sweet and sexy. Somehow, Bet's makeup skills have made me look brand new. I am all flawless skin and deep-set eyes and a throaty, heady laugh that will make all the boys want me. I am who I've never been before and may well never be again, if I'm honest. I'm everything Bet wants me to be, and for right now, I'm okay with that. My reflection in the mirror allows me to believe I am a girl Jaehee could want, that any boy could want. I smooth the front of the dress, and like my profile, for once. I'm in a cab with Bet and Eleanor, and we're racing down the West Side Highway, the windows wide open and the spring air blasting through, heading down to the meatpacking district to some club Bet knows the bouncer at. I've had way too much to drink. Bet pushes another mini vodka bottle into my hand. I shake my head no this time. I text Jaehee. Maybe he'll come here and see me and choose me once and for all. Maybe he'll see the new June, colorful and beautiful and pretending to be bright again, and fall head over heels. For real. We all climb out of the cab, and the guy waves us in, not even asking for ID. I've never been to a club, but this is just what I imagined. The music pounding through me like a heartbeat, the crowd pressing in on all sides, moving in unison, one big collective soul. As soon as we walk inside, we see the others, Gigi, Alec, Will, and everyone. It seems tonight all is forgiven. We're putting on a united front, for tradition's sake. I should be self-conscious, worried about the way I move, but I just let myself shake it out with the music, go with the flow. Will takes my hand and starts twirling me, and it feels too familiar, too much like ballet, so I pull out of his grasp.
Thanks for not saying anything. I was so paranoid. Everything is fine. No, everything is great.
His words are slurred and wet as he yells in my ear. I nod and try to slink away. He grins, then points to the bar. He disappears to get drinks. Gigi is beaming, wasted. She glows with happiness, or maybe it's just the black light, as her face falls in shadow and her teeth sparkle like little white lights in her mouth. She spins and shakes and shimmies and giggles, and I find myself doing the same. Dancing close, laughing, just like real girls do, like friends do. She shouts something toward my ear, but the noise is too much. It just absorbs the sound of her voice, like she said nothing at all. Then she points toward the door, and I see them. Seijin and her girls. And Jaehee, trailing sheepishly behind them. Suddenly, all my drunken happiness washes away, gone instantly, like what I'd imagine a sober, regretful, hungover morning would feel like what tomorrow will feel like. That's why he never texted me back. Will brings back drinks, glowing bright neon green in clear plastic cups. I snatch mine from Will and down it. Then I grab his hand and start grinding up on him, putting on a show. Will is surprised, but he catches my eye, then follows my gaze, willing to play along. Will might be gay, but Jaehee doesn't know that. I try to lose myself in the pulse of the dancing again, to forget that Seijin and Jaehee are here, to recapture that energy I'd felt just moments ago. But it's gone, and I'm suddenly, utterly drained.
Restroom!
I shout to Will, then start to push my way through the crowd. Seijin and her girls are all on one side of the dance floor. They scowl at me as I pass. When I finally get to the ladies' room, there's a line a mile long, winding deep into the club, all the way back to the bar. I look at my watch. 2:34 a.m. What am I doing here? This isn't me. This will never be me. I should just leave the others, hop in a cab, head back to the dorms. The performance is tomorrow. Maybe Gigi will be too hungover to dance. I'm pondering the best route out when I feel it. That familiar way he traces his fingers along my hip, up my side, to my shoulder. The way his fingers splay on the back of my neck, luring me close, leaving no space between us. "Hey," he whispers, his breath hot in my ear. "I'm sorry." He pulls me in even closer and kisses me. Right there, in the club, in front of a million people, where anyone can see us. "I've missed you." He kisses me again, and again, and again. And all I want to do is lose myself in him, in the way he makes me feel, like there's only the two of us in the world. But instead, I pull away, and the anger floods back, tears pricking at my eyes. I never cry. I just don't. I won't cry now. "Too bad," I say, and push him away, clawing my way forward through the crowd, toward the door. He follows me out onto the cobblestone streets, just inches behind me as I stumble and nearly fall. He catches me. "Hey, wait, June," he says, grabbing my arm in that familiar vise, the one that I can't get away from. "Wait, I came here for you."
"No, you didn't!"
I'm shouting, but no one notices.
"You're here with her. It's always her."
He's shaking his head, and there's a sadness in his eyes that tells me it's not true, that he really is here for me, even if it never feels that way, even if everything else rings false. "Can we go somewhere?" he says, already leading the way. Minutes later, we're in the back seat of his car in one of the parking garages, the beat-up old car his dad used to drive to church when we were kids, the silver faded to gray, the shine long gone. It's eerily quiet, like we really are alone in the world, even though the thump of the club is just half a block away. And he's looking down at his hands, worn and cut up from chopping vegetables at his mom's restaurant. The exhaustion I feel reading heavy on his face. He's pondering what to say, how to fix it, worried it's too late. Then suddenly, I'm sobbing. And his hands stroke my hair, my face, and he's whispering that it will be okay. But it won't. Nothing will ever be the same again. Because now I know. "I have a father," I say through tears. "I know who he is, finally." I'm shaking, but I have to tell someone. I have to tell Jaehee. "And he doesn't want me. Nobody ever wants me." I don't let him say what I know he'll say. That he does want me. That he never stopped wanting me. So when he turns to me, finally, and opens his mouth, about to fill the space with unnecessary words, I just kiss him. To make it quiet again, to go back to that warm, safe place. But this time, it's not soft, not safe, like it was in my room that one time. This time, it's urgent, now or never, decision time, and every part of me is saying it's time to give in, to say yes, to put the past behind us and make the future look bright. Like Bet said, it's time to claim Jaehee. To make him mine. To have one thing that's real.
Chapter 43. Gigi. The DJ's spinning hip-hop music, and I can't stop moving. Not ballet moves. Wild, unsanctioned, loose. Positions Morky would hate. Movements Mr. K would frown at. We're all bunched in a group. Dancing all together, laughing all together. Bet is laughing and smiling. Even June, who I thought had left, is back and letting loose, this faraway grin on her face. I feel a little better. Spirits lifted just like Alec promised. Alec leaves to go get more drinks at the bar. While I wait for him to return, the floor oscillates and waves beneath me. The lights streak across the floor like rainbows trapped inside. I stretch my arms and legs out and feel the room spin.
My wristband glows different colors, and I don't know if it's my eyes or the actual wristband. I don't mind wearing something other than my monitor. I've had too many glasses of champagne, and God knows what else. More alcohol than I've ever had in my entire life. More alcohol than Ella and I ever consumed back home on the beach for her 16th birthday last year. It feels nice to float, and I wish I had my very own cloud. I laugh as the whole room spins me in a circle, like I've fallen into a whirlpool. I think I can feel the Earth's rotation, and I'm positive that I'm turning along with it. I feel like a regular teen again. I'm sure I'm imagining things. Truce? I hear over the music. Bet holds out a drink. It's got a pineapple slice floating around in it. What is it? I holler. A special delivery, she says, her words running together. She seems pretty drunk already. I laugh. No, really. Seriously, that's what the drink is called. She pushes it into my hand. I'm sorry for my part in some of the stuff this year. I was wrong. I don't know what to say. What new thing is she exactly owning up to? I didn't put that glass in your shoe, though. That wasn't me, she says. She puts her hands up, like she's not guilty. She stumbles forward, and I catch her arm. And I sure as hell didn't kill your butterflies. Okay, I say back, not sure how to respond. So, starting over? She raises her drink. I let it hang there for a while, then give in to get her to go away. I clink mine with hers and sip the drink. Alec returns. We all dance and spin until I can't feel my legs anymore. He pulls me closer to him, buries his face in the place where my neck meets my shoulder. At first he just rests there, then he starts kissing the soft skin. I'm shaking from the mix of the alcohol and the nearness of him. The feel of his tongue near my earlobe. The heat between us. I can feel your heart pounding, he says. Are you okay? That feels amazing, I say, barely recognizing the breathiness of my voice. He moves from my neck to my mouth, and the kiss is intense, passionate. I wrap my arms more tightly around him, listen to the sharp intake of breath when I press myself against him. Soon he's got me pushed into a dark corner. His hands are up my dress, wandering from one patch of skin to another eagerly. I'm focused on Alec, but I can feel eyes on me. That's probably, of course, despite what she might say. But when I look up, I also see Will watching us, and Henri not far behind him. For once in my life, though, I don't care. Let them watch. Let them want. We pull apart to catch our breath, and neither of us can hold back our smiles. He kisses me again, and I crumple into him. Alec parts my legs with his hand and my mouth with his warm tongue. I love the heavy way he feels, like I'm in a safe little space beneath him. I slip in and out of time until Will interrupts us. Time to go, lovebirds. Ari's figured us out. They're on a rampage. I've got a dozen calls. Mr. K is on his way down here. We race outside. Alec is ahead of me. I feel a hand on my shoulder. I look up. My vision is blurred, but it's Will. Hey, I say, wanting to thank him for the heads up about Mr. K coming down here. But Alec calls my name from ahead, and I try to catch up. My feet slip and slide on the old-fashioned cobblestones. But I feel like I should be able to walk on these streets if I can dance in point shoes. I can't stop laughing. We're all falling over one another and thrilled by the idea of Mr. K's angry face. The excitement, or maybe all the alcohol, is making me lightheaded. June, all buttoned up again, but softer still, smiles at me as she walks beside Jaehee, even though Seijin's watching them, about to explode. I wonder what's going on. And Bette and I even laugh at the same stupid joke Will makes on our way out the club doors. I step into the street to cross over. My heel snags on one of the cobblestones. I feel hands on my back, and my body lurches forward. My eyes go blank. The irregular beat in my chest quiets. The street stands still.
Chapter 44. Bette. There are screams and so much movement on the street it feels like backstage before dress rehearsal. I feel the beginnings of tears in my eyes. The world is fuzzy. I am frozen in place, heavy and slow. It feels like I'm underwater, and I'm drowning. All I want is Alec. Gigi is stretched out on the street in front of a yellow taxi. One leg is bent beneath her. The other is covered in blood. She isn't moving. The cabbie is frantic, crying, worrying. On the street, and somewhere not too far off, sirens are zooming, closer by the second. I back away and almost fall backward onto the curb. Will stands there with his hand cupped over his mouth. "Where the hell is Alec?" I finally manage to say. And I know I'm spitting out the words. I know I don't look well. "What just happened?" Will says, all trembles, hands, mouth, voice. The sounds of sirens echo from down the block. "Where's Alec?" I say. Will gives me a good, long stare, and strange emotions pass over his face, one after the other in quick succession. He doesn't say a word, doesn't look away, just lets the feelings overcome him until he gets his voice back. He's frozen in place. "I can't find Alec," I say when a minute has passed and some amount of the news has sunk in. "Alec," Will shouts like he's come back to life. He knows what to do. We run through the crowd, dodging onlookers. Bodies blur around me, a mosaic of arms and legs and moving parts. "Will!" I whip around at the sound of Alec's voice. "Gigi was right behind me," Alec says. The look on Alec's face says it all. His blue eyes are all big and cloudy. He sinks to the curb and sits. "Where have you been?" I say. My voice starts rising. "Let him breathe, Bette," Will says. But I want to claw at him for suggesting I need to do anything but figure out what is happening. "I can't explain it," Alec says, trailing off. "What happened?" I say. I keep stepping closer and closer to Alec, who just will not get off the ground. We were all standing there. Ahead of us in the street, the paramedics surround Gigi. Cops push back the crowds. They start asking questions. I bolt, and I try to blend into the crowd. I get farther away from the curb. I find Eleanor nearby, whose eyes are red from crying. "Jesus," she says when she sees me. "Where'd you go?" She's worried, but she puts an arm around me, hugs me to her, and I know I can trust her. She's the same girl I met when I was 6 years old, my best friend. I try to stop my body from shaking. It all happens so fast. The scene replays in my head like some twisted ballet. Where everyone was standing, the cacophony of the taxi's blaring horns, the uneven cobblestones. I try to make it all make sense in my head. We called a truce. We were all pals hanging out. I didn't touch her. Did I? "Please tell them I was standing beside you. Please. I think they might accuse me." I cry then, dig my head into her shoulder and hide there. She doesn't agree or disagree, but she rubs my back, and I think maybe it will be okay. She whispers in my ear. "I was across the street, Bette. You were right beside Gigi, and so were Will and June." When I emerge from the moment on Eleanor's shoulder, I look up to see Alec talking to the police. I want to run again, badly, but I hold back. I squeeze Eleanor's arm until she yelps. I need her to hold me steady, like she's always done when things get bad. I feel like I might fall. "You're hurting me," Eleanor says, but I can't let go. I'm next. I know they'll call me next. I turn around and look to see if I can go inside a nearby store, to at least get a grip before trying to talk to police about this girl that everyone knows has been my enemy all year. But I can't get out of the crowd, because a wide set of shoulders block me. "Heze," Henri says. He's not crying. He's not shaking or sad. He's not hiding his face in his hands. He's smiling. He's smirking. "Where do you think you're going? The police want to talk to all of us." He's terrifying. The ambulance lights wash him in blues and reds. His eyes almost glow. The cops approach with their pads. My mouth opens, but nothing comes out. I just want to call my mother. I want her for the first time ever. "Where were you standing?" the cop asks for the fourth time. I can't answer. Eleanor squeezes my hand. "Bet, answer." Henri raises his hand like we're in English class and says, "Officer, I saw Bet Abney push the victim into the street."
Chapter 45, June. We all move in a dream state. I watch the paramedics roll Gigi to an ambulance. She is strapped in and her head is in a brace. Pretty face, long limbs, perfect feet, all a mess. The others bombard me with questions, so I make my shoulder shrug over and over. Up, down, up, down, up, down. Mouth a little bit open. Eyes blinking slowly. Hand making its way to my forehead every few minutes, like I could somehow wipe away the headache. I'm barely here. Bet bursts into tears. Not angry ones or bitter ones. Little girl tears. Sad tears. Unexpected, after all the vitriol in her voice. I almost reach for her, to pat her arm or something, but she's still Bet. She's still untouchable and unpredictable, and I'm still June. Even in my tight dress and overpowering makeup, not that much has really changed. She screeches,
"I didn't push her!"
And the cops move her to the side. Since everyone but Will is frozen, and Bet and Alec are locked in some horrible death stare, I don't know what to do or where to go. I sink right down on the curb. I think through what just happened. I try to place everyone on the street. I was the last one to leave the club. Henri was first. I think Bet, Gigi, Alec, and Eleanor went out together. I think Will was in the clump too. I squeeze my eyes shut. I can't think. I can't rearrange them in my head. Gigi's parents and Aunt Leah appear out of nowhere, and they are crying and turning from person to person, looking for answers. We don't have any. A few of the dancers pat Mrs. Stewart on the shoulder, but the rest of us just look at the ground and mirror her tears. Gigi looks like her mother. Big, curly hair like a lion's mane, a few freckles, warm eyes, that caring smile. Her father just stares blankly at everything and everyone. Mr. K passes right in front of me. I didn't know he was here yet, but people keep popping up on the street, unexpected, the way they are in dreams. Out of context. He isn't in his normal clothes, has a robe wrapped around him and uncombed hair. Mr. K has bedhead and a panicked voice. The world is all wrong.
"Get inside these cabs," Mr. K orders. "Everyone. Now."
But there's no power behind the order. And for the first time ever, we don't listen.
Chapter 46. Bet. I still feel like I'm going to pass out. I walk in circles, trying to keep myself awake, not allowed to move from the spot where the policeman told me to stay. I'm biding my time before more police and Mr. K and Gigi's parents approach me. But I have not evaded Alec. His hand is on my shoulder, and at last, the one thing I've been so desperate for actually happens. He pulls me into a hug, kisses my hair, squeezes so hard I could get lost in the feeling if I wanted. "You're shaking." "I didn't do it," I say. "I swear I didn't do anything." I look up at him, my blue eyes meeting his in a silent agreement. We haven't looked at each other like this in months. "I know," Alec says, his voice slow and careful, like he knows exactly what happened and who did it. "But someone did."
Chapter 47, June. The crowd closes in on me. Gigi's parents are approaching, and the questions from the cops are coming fast and furious. I drank all that champagne, I threw up both the alcohol and party food, and my roommate is gone. My mouth waters, and I see sparkles all around. I faint. It's just one little moment. Any other day, it would be small enough a thing for them to ignore, maybe, or to earn another lecture from Nurse Connie. But tonight, with EMTs swarming, and Gigi already carried away, they are all on top of me. I come to, 1/2 second later, and an EMT is in my face, chewing gum and asking questions. I shudder under his touch. He checks my pulse, searching for it on my wrist, and then using a stethoscope on my heart, looking for the beat like they just did with Gigi.
"Stop it,"
I snarl.
"You're not well," the EMT says. "Don't get up."
"I'm fine," I say.
I keep squirming away from him, but he won't stop prodding.
"Your blood pressure is so low, I'm surprised this hasn't happened before. We need to tell your teachers. Talk to your school nurse."
The EMT goes on, but Mr. K interrupts and puts me in one of the cabs. We return to school, but Mr. K doesn't allow us to go up to our beds. Instead, I sit in his office, surrounded by him and Mr. Lucas and Morky and 2 suited detectives with grim expressions. They ask me the same questions over and over again. How it all happened. Who was next to Gigi? What were we all doing? Drinking? Drugs? Did she have any enemies? Did anyone have a motive? They ask me about the butterflies, the glass in the shoe, the message on the mirror, the dead cockroaches in the box. Piling up evidence to pin on someone. They keep throwing out the questions, and I think I speak. I think I respond. But I'm sniffling and sobbing, and I'm not sure anything I'm saying is making any sense. Then, the door flies open, and everyone is shocked out of our circular discussion. It's my mom. And she's angry. Her face is red and splotchy, and she's wearing her pajamas and a robe, like she rushed over here as soon as she heard. Underneath all my pain and frustration and sadness, I register that this pleases me, that she might actually care, that I was important enough that she shattered her illusion of perfection to get here as fast as she could, and that this is her first time inside this building in nearly a decade. She stops like she's been hit. She and Mr. Lucas stare at each other. The whole room waits for her to speak or blow up.
"Ma'am,"
one of the detectives says.
"My daughter should be in bed. You can ask questions later," she says to the room,
but she's looking right at Mr. Lucas, whose face has strained of all color, as if he's seen a ghost.
"Dominic, did you hear me?"
She wags a finger 2 inches from his face.
"She painted. Don't you care at all?"
She's so aggressive. The other detective urges her to calm down. All the while, their eyes watch each other. My mind and heart do flips as the magnitude of him being my father hits me. He's the man my mom fell in love with. He was her paw partner. He's the man who cruelly discarded her and abandoned me even before I was born. He's the man who's chosen to ignore his own flesh and blood for all these years, even as I stood there, close enough for him to cast a shadow. My mom fires off a zillion questions. Why is she being brought in? What does she have to do with Gigi? Why would she have any reason to want her dead? Mr. Lucas sits in glum silence as my mom rampages, and I keep trying to figure out what to say to placate her. My first instinct is to say, not dead, but gone. But obviously, that would really put the bullseye right on me. I can't trust myself not to give anything away. So I decide to keep my mouth shut. I can't focus on the conversation. How dare you bring my daughter into this? Mom says, and she's glaring right at Mr. Lucas. I will take her right out of this godforsaken place. She doesn't belong here anyway. I snap back to reality. I can't let that happen. I can't let her use this as an excuse. But Mr. K springs into action, directing my mom to a seat, apologizing, saying that they're doing everything possible to cooperate with the authorities on this. It is, he says, his voice taking on that same annoying holier-than-thou quality. After all, a matter of life and death. Anything I want to say is drowned out by the chaos. It's then that it really hits me. Gigi is really hurt this time. Gigi could actually die. To my surprise, the first thing in my head isn't sadness or anger or fear. It's something else. This means I'm going to be dancing Giselle.
Chapter 48. Bet. Bet, Mr. K says, and it feels like we're both underwater, and he's trying to talk to me. Yes, I say, trying to stand up from a lobby chair. He catches my arm. It's your turn. He walks toward the office. And your mother is here. We called all parents, and she insisted on being here for your statement. I can't move out of first position. Mr. K waves his fingers like I am a dog meant to follow him, but I'm frozen with my back to the lobby window and my face, unfortunately, exposed to every other person in class. It feels like it's been days, but the accident was only an hour ago. Snap out of it! A voice in my head screams, and it's enough to get my arms at my side and my feet parallel and ready to walk. I do everything I can to keep my head held high. Mr. K takes long, rushed strides, and I nearly have to run to keep up with him. Can I stop in the bathroom? I finally say, right before we reach the door that leads into his office. He just sighs in response, stops walking, but doesn't turn around. He's giving his permission, but just barely. I am so screwed. I splash water on my face because right now, my brain is swimming with blurry, half-formed thoughts. I need to be on my feet if I'm going to survive whatever is behind that door. Mainly, my mother. And accusations that I pushed Gigi in front of that cab. Mr. K holds the door to his office open for me. My mother's eyes are red, but otherwise, she looks beautiful. Still dressed in her gala gown. Her lips wine-stained, which means she fell asleep in it. The police officer has a horrible yellow legal pad. I take a seat next to my mother, and her eyes start to water, which is especially strange, because my mother does not cry. Not ever. Not when my father left her. Not when Adele got offered a spot at the American Ballet Company. Never. Tell the police officer what happened tonight, Bet, Mr. K says. He doesn't look at me. He talks to the wall in front of him. His focus on that blank white wall is so intense, you'd think it was my face. "Yes, Bet, I'm Officer Jason Hamilton," he says, rubbing the dark mustache stretched over his lip. "Tell me what happened." Gigi had had a lot to drink. We'd been dancing all night. I think she tripped.
"Have you had anything to drink?"
he asks. "Yeah, we all did. But she had had a lot, you know? Your classmates have told me you haven't been the biggest fan of Giselle Stewart," Officer Hamilton says. "My God," my mother says, like she's just hearing about what happened. Her voice is choked up. I look at her face. I don't want to miss it. I'm not glad that she's crying, but I'm fascinated that I could cause those tears, that Gigi could make her feel something so deeply. "Which classmates?" He flips through his notes. "I am not at liberty to say, but many of them said you always seemed to have it out for her, and a few of the other girls corroborated this story." Shame rushes to my face, and I know I have turned a hot, terrible pink that won't vanish until I am long gone from this room. I try not to ball my fists. I try not to let my face show anger that might get me in trouble. He tried to set me up. He tried to make me take the fall for this. "I didn't push her," I blurt out. I'm so hot I think I could faint. No one moves.
"No one said anything about her being pushed, Bet," Officer Hamilton says. "But if you did push her, you'd better tell me now before it gets worse for you."
"Gigi could die. You do realize that, Bet," Mr. K says, his eyes lasers.
I open my mouth to defend myself.
"Do you know what harassment is?" Officer Hamilton asks.
Mr. K pulls a book from his shelf and puts it in my lap. I'm too afraid to look down.
"Look it up," Mr. K says.
But,
I start. My mother squirms beside me.
"Bet."
Mr. K says my name like he's lost all patience with me. Like I'm some strange new fuck-up kid. Like he hasn't known me for forever. I flip open the English dictionary to the H section and run a finger down the page until I find the word. I let my finger sit there.
"Read it,"
he says. I choke on my words. "To harass means to subject to aggressive pressure or intimidation, or to make repeated small-scale attacks on an enemy." No one speaks for what feels like 1,000 years.
"Bet, I think it's time for us to go home now," my mother says. "Not another word. Officer Hamilton, is it? If you'd like to speak to my daughter further, you can make an appointment with our family lawyer." She produces a card from her purse like magic. "We've been very good to the American Ballet Conservatory and company. The new building is coming along, and the Rose Abney Plaza has never looked better. We will not be treated in this way." Mr. K is smirking at my mother, and I feel like she's just sealed my fate. His eyes are back on the wall, and to anyone else, it might look like his normal, neutral expression. But I know him, and he is hiding a laugh at the ridiculousness that is my mother and her power trip. Because now, she's given everyone what they need to blame me for this, whether I'm guilty or not.
Chapter 49. Gigi. I look out into the room, sterile white walls, bouquets of flowers, balloons and care packages. My vision is splintered into 1,000 little pieces. My eyes are sore and unused. The overhead light hums. My left leg floats above me, hanging in a sling. I don't know where I am. I try to move around, but my body feels stiff, like I haven't moved for 1,000 years. There are cuts and bruises all over my hands, Tight bandages cling to my left hip. A finger clamp connects me to a massive monitor.
Electrodes dot my chest.
The steady beeps are the only noise in the room. Mama? Dad? Aunt Leah? I whisper, not sure where in time and space I am. My voice scratches against the back of my throat, and I start to cough. No one answers. I squeeze my eyes shut. My mind starts to clear and memories flash in my head like beats of light. The spring gala, the club, dancing with Alec, the cobblestones,
the sidewalk, feeling the push from behind.
The last memory hurts, the cab crashing into me. My body aches at the thought of it. Mama? I say again, craning my neck, trying to search the room. Tears brim in my eyes. I search the left side of my bed for a button. Anything that will connect me to someone outside this room. Someone with answers. I hear the click of shoes against the floor. I turn my head to the left. My vision is blurred by tears. I try to wipe them away. Will inches closer and closer to the bed. What happened? I ask. Where are my parents? They're outside, talking to the doctor. Will slumps onto the bed, causing me to recoil with his shaking and sobbing. I'm so sorry, Gigi, he cries, his eyeliner smudging. It was Bet, wasn't it? Will looks stricken, but then slowly nods his head, his mascara streaking down his face. The heart monitor starts beeping wildly, and I try to get out of bed. I can feel the stitches in my side stretching as I lift myself up. Pain shoots through me. I can't even move my toes without little explosions of agony. I can't pull my leg out of the elevated sling. I'm not going anywhere. Will I ever be able to stand again, let alone dance? She told me she was going to do something to you. He cries. Something big. They haven't arrested her yet, but they should. I don't care what the cops do to her. It will never be enough. I know one thing. I have to do this myself. Bet's going to pay, I tell him.
Chapter 50. June. It's finally here. The moment I've been waiting all my 16 years for. The moment that will lift me out of mediocrity and onto the horizon. Make me the next primetime-worthy prima of the dance world. Elevate me higher than I ever truly thought possible. The performance is now a week later than it was supposed to be. And yes, Gigi had to lose so that I could get here. But Mr. K insisted that the show must go on. And so, the understudy steps into the spotlight. Finally. Make no mistake, I've fought long and hard for this moment, given blood, sweat, and tears, deprived myself at every turn. I've earned this. I wait in the wings as Eleanor basks in the thunderous applause from her second solo variation of the night. She danced Bet's solo in Act One, along with her own in the second act. Eleanor's undeniably a star tonight, but she won't outshine me. The heat of the lights is like a weight on my shoulders, heavy and tangible. The core wraps up their dance of the Willis, every foot and arm and leap in sync, and for a moment, the music, the audience, the world is silent as I take the stage. Alex circles the graveyard. He lays flowers on my grave. I flutter to the center. It's where I belong, where I've always belonged. Dressed and powdered in white, the perfect version of the Ballet Blanc. You wouldn't know I don't quite fit at first glance. I am Giselle. I am a ghost. But they all see me now. There are tiny excited gasps in the audience. Alec and I find each other. He takes my arms and holds me as we turn. I touch his face. pretend to lean in for a stage kiss and say goodbye as he returns to his life, and I to the grave. The motions are stiff and mechanical, not graceful and light. This is more awkward than I thought it would be. The reviews will say our chemistry is bad, but they don't know the real story. No one does. The applause rings out after I flutter off the stage, and Alec kneels before my grave once more. I return to the stage and take Alec's hand. We bow, and I try to focus on this final moment of glory. I should bask in the glow, knowing I've hit the pinnacle. But all I can think about is who's in the audience. My mom, who'd still rather die than see me be a professional dancer. But that's okay. I'm not alone tonight. Jaehee is there, with his dad and his grandmother. Jaehee, who finally showed me that I can be loved, whether I take center stage or not. That's what finally brings a smile to my face. Knowing he's there, that silly grin on his face, the pride bursting through. I blow a kiss from the stage. I can't see him, but I know he's there. The curtain drops in front of us. We go into the wings again. The entire cast gathers. The curtain rises again. Groups go on stage a few at a time to take their bows. I wait patiently until the lead soloists return to the stage at last. Eleanor goes out before me. I tiptoe behind her. People stand and clap as I curtsy all the way down to the floor, like the most gracious ballerina. Alec bows and twirls me around like he did Gigi after the Nutcracker. The orchestra conductor comes up and takes a bow. Then I reach out my arm, welcoming Mr. K onto the stage. He kisses both my cheeks, as he does with each girl who dances the principal solo. Mr. K bows to the audience, who stand and give him three long rounds of applause. He extends his arm to invite Mr. Lucas on stage. I swallow hard, and feel like I can hear his every footstep through the droning claps. Even without looking at him, I can feel my father's eyes on me as he takes my other arm, kissing my cheeks for the first time. He may be one of the sons in this world, but for me, there is no warmth there. He pretends to be proud and overjoyed. He starts to whisper something to me, then stops. I can feel him fretting about the secret he's kept for so long, the secret that maybe the whole world will soon know. The crowd turns its attention stage right. A figure ambles out onto the stage. I focus on smiling pretty for the flashing cameras, but the rest of the cast turns to look, then joins the applause. For a moment, I think it's Bette, that golden crop, that porcelain skin catching the stage lights. But it can't be. She's been sent home, dismissed from all end-of-school activities for the horrible things she did to Gigi. As I realize who it is, my heart sinks, plummeting straight down into the hollows of my always empty stomach. Cassie Lucas. Of course. Mr. Lucas invites her to center stage, turning away from me as he gives her the classic two kisses on her cheeks. Then Mr. K embraces her, his smile beaming light out into a confused audience. Watching her grin and bow, I realize that in ballet, no one is ever safe. The thrill of dancing the role of Giselle disappears.
Thank you all so much for coming, Mr. K says to the audience. We've seen an incredible display of hard work and talent tonight. The ballet world is fortunate to have these amazing young students joining its ranks very soon. And I'm so pleased to welcome another wonderful dancer, one of the Academy's brightest, Cassie Lucas, back to the conservatory. I'm so happy she's here with us tonight.
The sparkles in her baby blue gown bring out her eyes, glittering as the cameras flash wildly, the press from the major dance magazine swarming. They should be chasing me, singing my praises, promising me pages of accolades that define me as ballet's next rising star. But they're not, because they're surrounding her, Cassie, standing there, basking in the spotlight. My spotlight.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Tiny Pretty Things by Sona Charapatra and Danielle Clayton, performed by Imani Parks, Nora Hunter, Greta Young, Laura Delano. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015 by Sona Charapatra and Danielle Clayton. Production copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.